Welcome to the Blackboard Review's first official podcast, where we showcase the literary genius of the students of Voorheesville High School, as well as music, reviews, and many other talents.
And Jill Came Tumbling After, by Sarah Alden. Fate lies in my hands. My brothers were given useless gifts, like death, like life, like time. But only I was given truly the most powerful element to be conceived. I have undisputed total control. And I am bored. There is no challenge for such a perfect goddess such as myself. With the ability to control fate, I am unstoppable. Life has already succumbed to me. He stubbornly confronted me, upon my onyx throne, and the stillborn human child who was meant to grow and be a good man, to change their world. It was not death's doing. He can only take life once life has been given. He has always been the family runt. Life asks why I continuously and recklessly change the course of events. The fool, I responded, that it was my job. Life would not take that for an answer. His teal hair had lifted in a pretentious gust of wind when he accused me of using humanity's suffering as a means of pleasure. Well, to be honest, that was in fact my motive. I was not about to be controlled by the sad little man. Leaning forward so that my golden curtains of hair tickled his face, I stared into his eyes ravenously. The ignoramus had no idea what I was even doing until it was too late, of course. I had made sure it was like that. With just a blink, he fell backwards, like a board of wood balanced precariously on its thinnest end when a child walks by, waving his arms and smacking the plank so that it finally gives in to gravity. A pitiful death for a pitiful force. Death could do nothing to save his brother. I had him wrapped for far too long. He simply collected the soul as he did with any mortal being. Of course, life was not mortal. At least not until I made him that way. With life gone, there was no life. Everything was still born of mother, and everything still lived their lives as had been done before. No one even noticed life was gone. What they did notice, however, was a lack of will, of spirit. The drive of all humans and mortal creatures was absent. Every single being after the death of life simply moved along their paths. I created like a marble. Barely sentient creatures just followed their routes, and they did not experience one bit of it. The life was gone. It was all a veiled experience after that day. Shrouded in nothingness, the entire world lost entertainment. So I took it upon myself to make my own. I built expectations. I crushed dreams with a sudden assassination or an accident. I gifted the shells of people with hope, and then I made them give it back. This is how I work. Everything is mine, and when I give it away, it's only temporary. The only siblings of mine that I should be worried of is time. When everything is yours, everything begins to lose value over ages. My brother Time, with his ink-black skin and cloud-pale hair, is the only being capable of making me suffer. With his foully patient eyes, he can create eternities. When nothing has a point, there is, as expected, essentially nothing. And what has no fate? Nothing. My only hope is to take out Time, but I cannot do that without destroying myself in the process. I have mapped out every single plot to murder Time, and every single one has ended up with me eradicated as well. The end of Time is the end of fate. The end of fate is the end of existence. And the end of existence is the end of time. I'm sure he has come to the same conclusion as I have. We stare each other down every waking hour. Me carving my mazes and he steadily clicking his tongue. I in my white and golden robes and residing upon my onyx throne and him perched upon a wooden stool across from me, wearing a simple white tunic. When I ended life, he just glanced down at his sundial, at his feet. There was no shadow cast. There never was. Never has been a shadow. Every time I kill a mortal being or twist humanity for my own benefit, he glances at the infinite sundial and lifts his head back up to stare at me again. Our brother Death does not even enter our chamber, although he has his own graphite bench across from life's marble pillar and cold golden cushions, he is terrified of our tensions. He knows what I can do to him if he acts wrongfully, and he knows that if I do nothing, time will. He fears time's silent powers that can crush the strongest empires and dissolve the largest galaxies in a matter of patience. He may also avoid the throne room because of the coffin in the center. Our mother Cosmos lives there, unconscious. She's damaged every time her children use our gifts, though. Although only time causes her consistent pain. Eventually, I will call on death to finish her. I control her fate, after all. When that day comes, it marks the end of everything. We all fall down the hill, our crown shattering like our bones. So I wait. I will keep myself going as long as I can bear. And my brother, time, will not be making that a simple task. It is so disgustingly boring being the best, and it makes me wonder, is living to avoid demise really, truly worth it?
The Man in the Masks by Braden Racy. Over a 2-week period a long time ago, I had a particularly strange encounter with suspicious men who are unknown to me to this very day. On a summer day, I saw one man in a black mask. This mask was not out of the ordinary. It had eyes cut out to see the eyes of the person wearing the mask. On this first day that I saw the man in the mask, I thought nothing of it. But the most peculiar thing happened next. The next day, I was out walking again, and I saw two men in masks. These were the same masks that I had seen the day before. These people seemed to be following me because I saw them frequently throughout the day. Another strange thing about these men is that nobody else seemed to notice them. On the third day, I saw three men with the same black masks on, and they were again following me. This pattern progressed until on the 11th day. I took the day off from my work as a lawyer, as there were no pressing cases at that time, and I had been preoccupied by some other strange dreams that I had been having that week. The men did not show themselves to me that day, and I was very surprised and bothered. I don't like it when things change. I had gotten used to being followed and having people look at me funny because I saw the man in the masks. I knew that I wasn't crazy. I surely couldn't be making up these masked men in my head. That day, I was sitting at home and there was a knock on my door. It was the police, who told me that they had reason to believe that I had gone on a murder spree over the past 10 days. I told them that that was preposterous. I am not a mad person who goes around killing people. They insisted that I go in for questioning, and I told them that I would never go. They were insane for thinking that I, a prestigious and well-known lawyer, could do such a thing. They started to put me into handcuffs, but I resisted. I took care of the two policemen because they were being irrational. I dragged them out into the woods behind my house, where two masked men stood, watching me.
The Blackbird Review podcast is a production of the Blackbird Review in the Voorheesville Central School District. It is produced by Clarence Chen and Sarah Alden and includes the vocal talents of Lance Luther, Olivia Suazo, Sarah Alden, and Adriana Bruskell. All of the stories heard on the podcast and so much more can be found on our website, www.blackbirdreview.org. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.